Hello, this is recorded after the fact. We are currently working on getting a new sound system, which includes a new recording apparatus, which failed us for the class and we didn't have a backup. So I am recording this the next day so that you can have the information that we studied on that day. This is for studying the Bible chronologically. We had just finished looking at the Exodus. We had finished looking at the Exodus in Exodus chapter 40. And in that particular moment, they're still at Mount Sinai. They're on Mount Sinai from Exodus 19 all the way through Numbers 10. And they are currently constructing the tabernacle in the last month of the year, and they finish it in the on the first day of the month, on the first of Abib, and they finish it at that point, and that is in Exodus chapter 40 that we read that. I also have in there Numbers chapter 9 in our timeline, Numbers chapter 9, verses 15 through 23. We see, if we are reading this straight, that there is a some repeated information at the end, well, in Numbers chapter 9, that we've already read in Exodus chapter 40. And that information tells us that once the tabernacle was constructed, the Lord descended upon it and inhabited it for a time until they were ready to move. And when they were ready to move, he lifted himself up in the form of a cloud during the day and as a in the form of fire during the night to guide the Israelites through the wilderness. And he did so, and I believe he reminded the Israelites of this here in Numbers chapter 9, because they are about to leave Mount Sinai in Numbers chapter 10. So this is a reminder of what had happened there. You'll also notice that not all of this appears to be in complete chronological order. At the end of Exodus, we see that's the first of Abib, that's the first of the first month. And then in the beginning of Numbers chapter 1, we see that's the beginning of the second month. So we see that the book of Leviticus takes place in about a month's time, or at least that's what it seems to happen, and I generally believe that. But we see in Numbers chapter 9 at the very beginning that some events occurred in the first month, and so that is something to consider. They go back in time a little bit in the book of Numbers. We also see in Numbers chapter 7, that it's a long chapter, a lot of repeating, a lot of it states in that particular chapter that the Israelites were wanting to honor this tabernacle. They were wanting to celebrate this tabernacle. And so they decided each tribe would dedicate this tabernacle one a day for the 12 days after the tabernacle was completed. So on the first day, I have on the timeline that the tribe of Judah was the first tribe to do so. And we see this tribe of Judah honoring the tabernacle with their dedication right after the tabernacle was constructed. And around this time, I also have Leviticus chapters 1 through 7 as well. So as you'll see on the timeline, if you've got it, you'll notice that Numbers chapter 7 continues on because each tribe a day, and we have that. There's a 7-day period in the next entry, and that's 7 more tribes, and then it finishes in the period after that. What's happening at around this same time, we see in Leviticus chapter 8 that the priests are consecrated. Now, I have this at around the 2nd to the 8th of Abib because there is a 7-day consecration period. And we know this must take place before the Passover in the 14th of Abib, because that is the priest must be consecrated before that kind of thing takes place. So I just have that from the 2nd to the 8th. Now that's a guess, but I think it's a decent one. I mean, it could be anywhere from the 1st to the 14th. And we see in Leviticus 8 that that's when that happens. And that's a 7-day period in which they are consecrated. And what happens right after that is Leviticus chapters 9 and 10, we see priestly duties are given. And then we also see at the beginning of chapter 10, if you're a member of the Church of Christ, you ought to be very familiar with this. At the beginning of Leviticus chapter 10 is Nadab and Abihu, the story of them, where these are the elder sons of Aaron. And they offer a strange or profane fire before the Lord. And it is a fire, the Bible says, that the Lord had not commanded them. And since the Lord had not commanded this to them, they were killed. The Lord kills them outright immediately in the fire. And in that particular, in verse 3 of that chapter, in that context, the Lord tells Moses to say that the Lord must be regarded as holy. And that's one theme that we see throughout the book of Leviticus, is that everything that's talked about is holy, is most holy. And one of the problems is that Nadab and Abihu were not treating the Lord as holy. And that is something that is a lesson for all of us, that we must treat the Lord as holy. Every instrument that was used in the service to the tabernacle was sanctified, was consecrated, was made holy, was set apart for this purpose. And that is something that we do not see in the religious world today, in the sense that many things that are used are not consecrated. They are not made holy. And the way they're made holy is through authorization in the Bible. And that is the kind of authorization that we see in Leviticus chapter 10 that was not given to Nadab and Abihu for this fire. And it's not given for many of the practices that we see in the religious world. In particular, instrumental music, which we talk about in the morning service in a little bit. So these things are very important. These principles are very important for us to follow and abide by. Now, there's another interesting thing. In Leviticus chapter 16, we see that this particular, that it specifically states after Aaron's sons died, after they were killed, that the laws of the Day of Atonement were given. Well, there's this gap in chapters 11 through 15 that we see these chapters that have different laws and whatnot, and it is difficult to say when this exactly occurred. Did this occur after the death of Nadab and Abihu as well, or perhaps this occurred during the 7 days in which they were to be consecrated, the priests. So I have it on my timeline as after all of this occurring, after Nadab and Abihu are killed. Really, it's a matter of opinion. It's not a huge, huge thing. I have also on here that the Passover is kept, and I have Leviticus 23, and the only reason why I have that there is because that is when these laws are reiterated. The laws on the Passover and other Jewish holidays, Israelite holidays that they had at this time. Also, Numbers chapter 9 specifically says this particular revelation that is given to Moses is talked about in the first month, and I have it here in the 14th of Abib because it is talking about the 14th of Abib. It probably happened a little bit before because there was a situation where there were some people who were unclean. They wanted to partake of the Passover, but they were unclean and they were therefore forbidden from doing so. So God makes an allowance for them so that they could take it a month later in the 14th of Ziv. And so that is reflected on here as well. So they keep the Passover and the Feast of the Unleavened Bread. And in the interim, in between the Feast of Unleavened Bread and the census that is taken at the beginning of the book of Numbers, in Numbers chapter 1, we see that a man is stoned for blasphemy. He is the son of an Egyptian, Egyptian man and an Israelite woman. And he blasphemes the Lord, and he is killed for that sin. We see more laws are given, and we see a summary in Leviticus chapter 26 that is given as well. Then in Numbers chapters 1 through 4, we see that a census is taken. Chapters 5 and 6 talk about different laws as well, including laws concerning vows and the Nazarite vow in particular. And then we also see that in chapter 8, the Levites are consecrated. So at first, the priests are consecrated in Leviticus chapter 8, and then we see the consecration of the Levites in Numbers chapter 8. And the reason for this is their particular duties. The Levites were to carry the articles of the tabernacle. They were to carry the Ark of the Covenant. They were to carry all the utensils that were used. They were to carry all the things that were used to construct it. That was their role during the time of these years as they were heading toward the Promised Land. We see that at some point then, in the 14th of Ziv, the late Passover is kept by those who were unclean for the previous Passover. And then the trumpets are fashioned in Numbers chapter 10. Now these trumpets are used primarily to signal. You know, they didn't have cell phones or walkie-talkies back then. They had to use some other means to let 2 million or so people. The census that was taken, there were about 600,000 men who were of fighting age. So the low estimate really is about 2 million people. And we see that they are. This is about a month and a year and a month since the, maybe a little bit over a month, about almost, yeah, about a month, yeah, where they are from the Exodus, and they are about to leave, and they need these trumpets in order to signal. So they are signaling when these things are told to happen. Where their movements and all the things like that. You might hear my cat. I'm doing this in the room with my cat, so she's meowing a little bit, so I apologize for that if that's disruptive. And then finally, it says in Numbers chapter 10 that the Israelites are prepared to leave in the 20th of Ziv, the 20th day of the second month. And not but 3 days later, in the first three chapters of the first three verses, in Numbers chapter 11, we see that the Lord is angry with them. In Numbers 33, remember I'm using this as the baseline where we see the different places that the Israelites go. In Taberah, they are. I believe that this is the place that they go to in between the wilderness of Sinai, in between Mount Sinai, and the place that was later called Kibroth Hattaavah, which we'll talk about in a second. And Tabera, in the first three, I believe Tabera, in the first three verses, 3 days later, 3 days after they leave, in Numbers chapter 11, verses 1 through 3, the Lord burns them up. They're complaining. And he burns up many of the people on the outskirts. And that is, it shows just how we are, just how quickly we forget. They are only 3 days from the mountain. They've seen the wonders of God. They have seen the fire on the mountain, the thunder on the mountain. They have seen all these great things happen, and yet they fail. They complain. And that is certainly a state to be in. A little while later, at the latter part of chapter 11, we see that the people are complaining even more. And they're like, oh man, we only have this manna. We see in the book of Exodus, when the manna first comes, that quail came at some point, but it was not a regular thing. It was only at this point in Numbers chapter 11 that quail becomes a regular thing, where they are receiving this quail. The 70 elders are chosen as well to deal with the people. And the place is called Kibroth Hattaavah, which means graves of lust. What happened to these people is they began eating this, and they began eating it so much that it came out of their nostrils. And they were ungrateful for what the Lord had done for them, and they gave in to their cravings. And the Lord strikes them down, many of them down, for doing this. And then not but a little bit later, they go to Hazeroth. And it's in Hazeroth that we see that Moses marries an Ethiopian. And we see that Miriam and Aaron come forward, and they offer some dissension. And it was at this point where Moses writes down that he is the most humble man who's ever lived. it's a bit of a funny thing, because he writes that down. The Lord said it, but he has to write it down. And so he's writing down that he's the most humble man ever. But we see that these two are offering a dissent. And that's it's a funny thing too. We see that the Lord calls them before the tabernacle. And I've always pictured this. It seems like, just reading it, it sounds like that they're being called to the principal's office. That these two brothers and sister, these siblings, are bickering, and they are called before the principal, as it were, called before the Lord, as children might be. But these people are, according to the timeline, Moses is 81, Aaron is 84, and Miriam, at the youngest, is probably 88. These people are in their 80s, and they are bickering in this way, and it's just an interesting thing. But Miriam is punished for it directly. She is given, she is considered unclean, given leprosy for 7 days, and she is put outside the camp, and they stay in that location in Hazeroth for 7 days. And so that is where they go. After this, they go through Hazeroth to the wilderness of Paran, to the wilderness of Zin. And Numbers 33, verses 18 through 36, lists a lot of places during this time. And they are skipped over in the main narrative. Places like Rithma, Rimmon Perez, Libna, Rissa, Kehelatha, Mount Shefer, Harada, Makaloth, Tehath, Tera, Mithka, Hashmona, Moseroth, Bene Jaakon, Hor Haggidgad, Jotbatha, Abrona, and Ezion Geber. Now, I mention these because some of these are mentioned in Deuteronomy chapter 10. They're mentioned, some of them anyway, are mentioned in a different order. Moseroth, Bene Jaakon, Hor Haggidgad, and Jotbatha are mentioned, but again, in a different order. Now, there's no indication necessarily in Deuteronomy 10 that Moses is trying to say this is the order in which they happened, in which they went. So we just say, oh, they went to these particular places, And one of them is not mentioned, though. Hor Haggadgad is not specifically mentioned, but they do mention a name that's kind of like it, and that's Gudgoda. Now, I want to prove to you that these two are the same place. The word Hor, H-O-R, is just the word for mount or mountain. And so perhaps, you know, sometimes you might say, oh, well, there is Mount Airy. Well, you might just say, well, Airy is up there. You might not necessarily say mount. And so that is what they might get rid of as well. And it's funny because later we see Mount Hor, and that is essentially Mount Mountain. So that is, that's kind of repetitive there. But the H-A beginning, a prefix essentially, that is given in Hebrew is a definite article. It shows a definite article. So you might get rid of that as well. You don't need the H-A. So you're left with Gidgad. And if you get rid of the vowels, because Hebrew has no vowels, and very much the vowels are fluid in that particular language, they change with different forms, and it can be very, very confusing if you're not familiar with the language. But if you get rid of them, all you have left for Hor Haggadgad, if you get rid of Hor and Ha, you get G-D-G-D. All right? And then with Gudgoda, if you get rid of all the vowels, you get G-D-G-D-H. So you have an extra letter at the end. But that letter is not pronounced. If it's at the ending of a word, but then you also get that vowel. But really, it means the same thing. Looking up these names and what it means, Hor Haggadgad is or Gudgoda, same thing, means caverns of thunder, and so that is where they went. So this is the same thing. There is no contradiction. That's the point of my going over this. That there is no contradiction that is talked about in these passages in between Numbers 33 and Deuteronomy 10. All right. So it is at this point that they go to the wilderness of Zin, in which Kadesh, often called Kadesh Barnea, is located. The spies are sent out. And that is a 40-day venture. They take 40 days to spy out the land. Of course, the two famous ones are Joshua, the son of Nun, also called Hosea. Hoshea. That's his real name, and Joshua is a given name that Moses calls him. And Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, who's of the tribe of Judah. And so they spend, these 12 men spend 40 days in the wilderness, and two of them come back with a positive report. And of course, those are Joshua and Caleb. And then the other 10 come back with a negative report. And this negative report is what becomes popular among the people. And so they are... they complain and they say, well, we can't take this. There are giants in the land. We can't do that. We can't conquer these people. And yet we see in Deuteronomy, later also in Numbers, but also Deuteronomy, that there are giants and they're conquered. We see in the book of Joshua how many giants are conquered. And they do eventually do so. But it's not this generation, because the sentence is given. For every day that these spies spent in the wilderness, they will spend a year in the promised land. They will spend a year in the wilderness. They've already spent about a year and 2 months. So because they count inclusively, that's about 2 years. They count for about 38 years wandering around at Kadesh Barnea. And actually, it does take about a year for them to go from Kadesh Barnea to Jericho, to cross the Jordan. It takes them about a year to do that, as we'll see eventually. So 38 years, not a lot is recorded. Now, some big events are recorded, certainly, but not enough to cover a whole 38 years. But we see some interesting things occur regardless. We see this is just about five chapters, numbers 15 through 19. We see that a man is stoned. He picks up sticks on the Sabbath. They wonder what to do with them. They ask Moses, and he is to be stoned. I mean, sin is serious, and he was not remembering the Sabbath. He was not keeping the Sabbath. And the other person who had blasphemed, he was disobeying one of the Ten Commandments. He was, and that's don't take the name of the Lord in vain. And so, disobeying the law had some serious consequences back then. And it's a wonderful thing that we don't have to live by that law any longer. We still have principles that are talked about, as we talked about with Leviticus 10, with obedience to the law, to the law of Christ in our case. But we don't have the consequences, the immediate consequences anyway, that we have here on earth. We're not immediately killed for doing something wrong. And thank God for that. Thank God for the blood of Christ that washes away our sins. For that, this law having been nailed to the cross. So, a man is stoned for working on the Sabbath. There's also a big event that occurs. There is a rebellion that we see with Korah, Dathan, and Abiram, and a few others. And it's interesting, a little bit later in Numbers 26, we see that Korah is killed in this particular event, but his sons are not, or his children are not, I should say. So we see that so many times that the family of the perpetrator is also killed. We'll see this in Joshua chapter 7, where Achan and his family are killed for what Achan had done. But we see here that Korah's children were not killed, and it shows that perhaps Achan's family were in on it, but Korah's family was not. Korah's family was not interested in this rebellion that Korah wanted to engage in. And we see later, much later in the book of Psalms, several of them are written by the sons of Korah. And so that's a great thing that we see that we can know that the families are if they're innocent, they're not punished. And we see in that the other families are Dathan and Abiram. Korah is a Levite, and he is one of the Levites. And we see that Dathan and Abiram, I believe, are of the tribe of Reuben. And so they are. They're saying, you take too much on yourself. You should spread the responsibilities around to other people. But we should have the authority is essentially what they're saying. And God eventually states that, I've given my authority to Moses and Aaron. I've not given it to anybody else. And so they have this test, and eventually what do you remember? If you remember what happens to these rebels, they are swallowed up in the earth. That is a huge thing. The earth swallows them up. It opens up, and they all just fall into it. And that's an amazing thing. And we see that during the 38 years that they're in the wilderness. And then we see one more thing. We see that to further prove the authority of Moses and Aaron, we see that Aaron's rod buds and blooms. And this is fresh almonds, ripe almonds. And this happens pretty quickly. And later, as a show of the authority that the sons of Aaron have, this particular rod is placed inside the Ark of the Covenant. And so that is some very important events that happened during these 38 years. Well, after that, we see a few more things that occur in Numbers chapter 20, they finally leave Kadesh and they're about to head to the promised land. They're on their way. And as they are heading, right before they leave in the wilderness of Zin, Miriam dies. Now, again, we don't know how old she is. I believe she was probably about 127 at the youngest, because she was the sister that she had to be old enough to follow Moses as he is in the basket on the river, and to tell Pharaoh's daughter about their mother to be used as a nursemaid. So she had to be old enough for that. So I think 7 years old is about the youngest that could possibly be. She could have been older. I don't know, but I think she was about 127. Of course, part of that is I might be influenced by media. I mean, some of the movies that I've seen show her as a little girl. So I don't know. I really don't know. But that's the youngest I think she could be. We also see that Moses strikes the rock at this point in Numbers 20. Now, this is the second time this happens. We see a lot of things that repeat here in the... in Exodus and in Numbers. And part of that, I think, is this is a new generation. This is all the people who were 20 years and older, or over 20 years and older, have died. With the exception, Miriam just died, with the exception of Aaron, Moses, Joshua, and Caleb, and maybe a few others. Some others may have died in the year that takes place in between leaving Kadesh and entering into the Promised Land. But we see definitely that Aaron and Moses died during this time. But so this is a new generation, and they've got to see some of these things that have happened. They might not have seen them before. Many of them weren't even born when they first occurred. Hopefully they were told about them, but we don't know. Moses strikes this rock. Now, he wasn't told to strike this rock. He was told to speak to it. He was told to speak to it. And one of the interesting things that we see in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 is Christ is with them during this time. We see that Christ is the rock, that in which water springs forth. Now, I don't know how that happens exactly, but it is something to consider that Jesus, well, later be called Jesus, the second person of the Godhead, was with them during this time. And that is an important thing to note, that God is with his people. But Moses and Aaron both, because they both are involved, they are punished for this sin, because they were told to speak to the rock. They were not told to strike it. But out of frustration, Moses strikes the rock. And water still comes forth, but it is not what God wanted him to do. He has shown that that God, he has diminished God's glory in that way. And that is a sin that makes it so that he is punished, so that he cannot enter into the promised land. He is allowed to witness it, to view it, but neither he nor Aaron are allowed to enter. All right, at some point, this is also called Meribah Kadesh. And this is, there's an earlier Meribah that we see much earlier in Rephidim. And it's also called Massa, Meribah and Massa. And that's both places, water from a rock, called contention. And that is a fitting name for what happens there. At some point, they ask the Edomites for passage through their land, and it is refused. Now, later in Deuteronomy, we read that it is, in fact, granted. So it's possible that the Edomite passage was refused at first, but then it is allowed later. But at this point, they are skirting around Mount Seir, which is the border of Edomite territory. And in fact, in Deuteronomy chapter 1, verses 1 and 2, we read that it will take 11 days to get from Mount Sinai to Kadesh. So that is 11 days to get there. And it says skirting Mount Seir, going around Mount Seir. So it should have taken 11 days for them to get there. But it ends up taking 38 to 40 years. And that is an amazing thing to consider, how it could have been a lot shorter than it really was. So they then end up at Mount Hor, again, mountain, and that is where Aaron dies. And they mourn for him 30 days, and it says it's in the fifth month that he dies. So that is the first of Ab to the 30th of Ab. And as a result, Eleazar succeeds him. If you recall, Aaron had four sons, Nadab, Abihu, Eleazar, and Ithamar. And Eleazar, being the eldest, after Nadab and Abihu are killed, ends up being the high priest that succeeds Aaron. And so he is working with Moses at this point, Moses and Joshua, because Moses is older and Joshua is gaining more and more responsibilities, as we'll see later. Now, the next one, I had some questions about this. I had thought that perhaps King Arad of the Canaanites had been, he had heard about the Israelites and about what they were going to do. And so he tries to attack them, and he is soundly defeated. So at first I had this at Zalmona, as we see from Mount Hor to Zalmona to Punon. But continuing to read and just looking at it, it seems like they attack them at Mount Hor. And hopefully this was after Aaron, they had mourned for Aaron. But that's when that had occurred. So they go to Zalmona, to Punon, which it says is by the Red Sea, some passages say. So they are going through there. And then we read about the bronze serpent, which, you know, I make a guess that this is where this occurred in Punon. And if you recall, with the bronze serpent, they had complained yet again, and they are poisoned by snakes. These snakes come and they poison them, and then they're offered deliverance, and the deliverance is through this bronze serpent. This bronze serpent is fashioned, and it is something that they look at, and they look at it, and they are healed. And this is a type of Christ, as we see in John chapter 3, that we are poisoned not by the poison of a serpent, but by the poison of sin. And this poison of sin infects us all and will kill us all. But if we look upon the Lord, which is to say we believe him and we obey him, then as he is lifted up, just as the bronze serpent was lifted up, he is lifted up on Calvary. We are able to be obtain salvation as a result of his sacrifice for us. And that is a wonderful thing that we can have. Later we read that about the destruction of the bronze serpent, so all the way in 2 Kings, or at least in the time of Hezekiah. So we read this, and we note that they have kept this bronze serpent this whole time. So they don't destroy it, they keep it from this point forward. All right. I believe this is where I ended last time, and we're at about time. So I want to, again, apologize for not getting the recording up quickly, but I'm glad that I was able to at least do this brief overview of what we had covered during that class. Join us next time for continuing the look at the looking at the Bible chronologically, and hopefully we'll enter into Canaan in the next class. All this occurs in the 2,538 years after creation, all the way up to 2,576 years after creation. So we see that this is a large chunk of time, but it is still about 2,500 years after Adam and Eve were created. All right, thank you for listening, and I hope that this was beneficial to you. God bless.